With the Green Bay Packers getting ready for their dress rehearsal preseason game against the San Francisco 49ers, we take a look at the most burning questions facing this team entering the 2016 season. Joining us to address these questions is Packers fan Jesse Melikar. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a preseason game this evening against the San Francisco 49ers. And we have a guest joining us in the studio today, our first ever in-studio guest on the show. He's Jesse Melikar. He's JessMan21 on Twitter. Give him a follow. Jesse was interested in seeing how the sausage is made, so to speak. So, Jesse, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it.
I usually start out our show by asking our guest, how they became Packers fans. So, Jesse, feel free to introduce yourself and answer that question.
Sure. Probably like most other Packers fans that grew up in the state, my father instilled in me that you had to be a Packer fan. So growing up, in the mid-80s, it was very tough. A lot of my friends were actually converting over to Chicago Bears fans just because we grew up in Janesville, Wisconsin, right on the border. My dad was not having any of that. So I grew up during the hard times, the Lynn Dickey, Randy Wright era. Then the Magic Man in 89 kind of turned things around a little bit. But love the Packers, lifelong fan. Appreciate being on the show.
I basically in the same situation as you growing up in the 1980s, and I can remember lots of my friends growing up in elementary school, a lot of them not really Packers fans, and probably they are now after the Packers have been, experienced so much success. But it feels good that those years are over, and we're kind of basking in the second glory years of the Green Bay Packers. But the way we're going to kind of do this show today is with Jesse in studio. We're going to kind of go through the five most burning questions facing this Packers team, the five most burning questions on offense, the five most burning questions on defense. And so I'm going to start off by asking Jesse the questions, then we're going to turn the tables. But so, Jesse, we're going to start with the offense, the five most burning questions, and in no particular order here. But I think one of the biggest questions facing this team, first of all, with Jordy Nelson coming back from injury this year. But I think the big question mark about Jordy, between his injury and age, what are the odds Jordy Nelson just isn't the same self we've come to know over the years? Which that's kind of like the scary situation for me, but what do you think about it?
Well, anytime you come back from a ACL injury, it's always tough, but we've seen plenty of players nowadays come back and have banner years. Look at Adrian Peterson with the Vikings, came back, had that monster year just after 9 or 10 months after ACL surgery. And I think with Jordy, I'm going to say the odds are low that he comes back and there's a big substantial drop off. There might be in the first couple of games, getting back into football shape, getting those first hits because he's been limited right now in the preseason and reps in the practices. But I would say pretty low. Jordy has a pretty good work ethic. I'm not concerned about that at all. He'll get back into it and become the same player that he was just a couple of years back. He is getting up there in age, so this could be the apex of his career. We might be looking at the downturn, but the downward trend with having a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, he's still going to make his receivers look good.
I certainly hope that's the case, that we see the Jordy Nelson, in terms of what point we see that, whether it's going to take a few weeks to kind of get back to 100%. If he gets back to 100%, I suppose a 99% Jordy Nelson would always be a good thing too. But I'm interested to see at what percentage he's at week one when the regular season starts. It kind of leads me right into my next question here, kind of the second most burning question facing this Packers offense, also having to do with the wide receivers. Has anything you've seen in training camp changed your mind about what the wide receiver pecking order will be? I think we all assume Jordy Nelson is number one, but kind of how does it fall after that?
Right. We're hoping that Jordy Nelson is going to be the number one that we've all loved and seen since his breakout in 2010/2011. We had that big year for touchdowns. After that, the way I see it breaking down, I would say Cobb is your number two and a really good number two. He's not quite a number one because he can't stretch the field as well as someone like a Jordy Nelson can. Number three is interesting. Last year, everybody, you know, before Jordy's injury, had Devontae Adams slotted in at the number three just because of his performances in the Cowboy game, the Patriots game. He looked good. He looked like he was going to make that next step in that leap in year two. Unfortunately, he had more of the sophomore slump. So we got to look and see year three, does he make that jump that we thought we could see him after being the MVP of OTAs back last year? So I still have Adams as my number three, locked in. Now we're getting into the tricky and gray area. you have Abadaris, you have Montgomery, and you have everybody's fan favorite, Jeff Janis. And then you have someone that's sneaking in, that's gotten a lot of press as of late, and that's Geronimo Allison out of University of Illinois. So breaking those down.
And Trevor Davis.
Oh, I totally forgot the rookie Trevor Davis. And, you know, what he brings to the table is good punt return skills. You saw that punt that he fielded, ran up the field, fielded it low, and took it several yards down the field. And he has the speed to stretch a defense. In my mind, we go Adams 3. Number 4, I go with Abadaris. Call me a homer, but I saw his whole career at UW. I saw Joel Stave during Abadaris' senior year overthrow at least 5 wide-open touchdowns. I like the chemistry he has with Rodgers. I like him in the slant. He can do a lot of things. So I'm going to go with Abadaris, number 4. Plus, he brings the kick return skills to the game as well. Mm-hmm. Now, number 5. I still go with Jeff Janis. Even though he has the broken hand, you can't downplay what he brings to the table with special teams. Being that gunner, you saw him last year just blossom into an ace special teams player. So it's hard to overlook that. I think he's making the 53 either as the 5 or the number 6 receiver. Then next, number 6, what I have, Trevor Davis. Just because he brings speed to stretch the field, which we sorely lacked last year, especially after Montgomery went down. You saw how the offense really changed, and that was in the Chargers game. So I have Trevor Davis just because of his speed and his punt return skills making the 53. Mm-hmm. He'll probably be active in the first, I would say, you know, 4 to 5 games that Janis is out with that broken hand. Mm-hmm. So to break it down, just as a recap, Nelson 1, Cobb 2, Adams at 3, 4 Abadaris, 5 Jeff Janis, and then 6 Trevor Davis.
And then Montgomery.
Oh, I totally forgot about Montgomery. You're absolutely right.
I know this is a tough question. I mean, because there's so many options with the Green Bay Packers that they have at the position.
So that's actually, let me just backtrack.
Feel free.
I have Abadaris at 4, Montgomery at 4A, Janis at 6, and then Davis at 7. That could change either way. You know, I honestly think
obviously, Jeff Janis is kind of a question mark right now with his health, and we don't know whether he'll be placed on injured reserve or he'll get the designation. Understandably, like, we don't really know what's going on with him.
I think they're probably going to designate him to IR with the option to return.
Yeah.
And we'll see how, you know, Davis grows into that slot or that punt return skill, because that's the major thing that he brings to the table. He can be a game changer. I know Abadaris has fielded punts. He doesn't have the burst or the speed that Davis brings to the table. So we'll see. Maybe someone gets traded as well for a, you know, conditional or mid-round draft pick. You never know.
So with a guy like Geronimo Allison, you think he's kind of destined for the practice squad this year with so many other options with the Packers that they have?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that Allison will be on the practice squad unless another team picks him up that needs wide receiver help for a number 5 or number 6 receiver. As you saw that Ted Thompson in his last interview, he didn't want to talk about undrafted free agents. He likes to play close to the vest. Because he wants to get those guys on his practice squad. And I think Allison could blossom if he continues to progress and flashes like he has in the preseason as well as in training camp. I think he could be an option down the line, especially when, you know, Jordy starts to hit the decline.
All right, so moving on here, and kind of in the same vein in that I'm still talking about pass catchers here, but the tight end position, and my number 3 burning question for the Packers offense, what kind of production can we realistically expect to see from Jared Cook this season?
Great question, Brian, and that's something that's been on my mind. As we saw McCarthy's press conferences in the offseason, they said they needed a big guy that can run down the seam. We didn't have that. We had Richard Rodgers, who unfortunately doesn't have the speed to break open that seam like past tight ends that we've had, JerMichael Finley, Keith Jackson back in the mid-90s in the heyday. What I see out of Cook is that he's averaged, excluding his rookie year, about 44 catches per year and right around 500 yards and a couple touchdowns. He only has 16 career touchdowns, which seems kind of odd because when I've seen Jared Cook's highlights, he's always been on these long touchdowns that he's broken off the seam. And he looks good, and he looks the part. He's fast. So my prediction for Jared Cook this year, I'm going to say right around 50 balls, 500, 600 yards. But I think he's going to have more touchdowns than he's had in years past just because he has an elite quarterback that's already, you've seen in the preseason games, he looks for him. He wants to make these plays happen. Mm-hmm. McCarthy really is going to stress hitting the tight end in the middle of the field so the secondary can't press our receivers. So if you're going to press our receivers, McCarthy's saying we're going to hurt you down deep in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, what the third preseason game being tonight. If you were to watch one thing out of this game, I would say it's watch Jared Cook and Aaron Rodgers. This is going to be their only opportunity during the preseason to work together. And, you know, he's kind of the one newcomer to the offense that they're really going to want to get their timing down. So that should be fun to watch tonight in terms of Jared Cook getting to work with QB1 on the Packers offense. All right, the number 4 burning question on this Packers team entering the 2016 season. Jesse, can you make the case that the offensive line can significantly reduce the number of sacks allowed this season, and why? Because I think the number was something like 48 last year, if I'm correct. I could be getting that number wrong. That's just off the top of my head. But it was unusually high, we'll say that.
It was unusually high. There's been some years that Rodgers has gotten beat up pretty bad. His health has been, for the most part, pretty good. The collarbone, the calf in 2014. But I think this year we've had this line together for a while. The newbie being J.C. Treader, but if we remember back in 2014, it was Treader's job to lose. Mm-hmm. He had an unfortunate injury. Lindsley stepped in, did a remarkable job out there. So I think that we're going to be able to keep Rodgers clean, especially having Nelson back, and as well as having Cook as your tight end. We have more weapons out there that's got to keep the secondary honest and not play that man-to-man bump physical coverage that we saw the Denver game on that. So just by having a better passing attack and more options at receiver and speed, it's going to help Rodgers get the ball out even quicker, and he's not holding on to it and scrambling for his life.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and also hopefully a little bit more healthy than 2015, in which, you know, David Bakhtiari didn't miss a long time, but missed, you know, a few games there at the end. And towards the beginning of the season, Brian Bulaga missed a little time. Now, if those guys stay healthy, certainly a better situation as well. And then finally, so my number 5 pressing question and fifth and final here for the Packers offense in 2016. Aaron Rodgers, he had career lows in a number of statistical categories last year. And I think people like to point to the receivers being the primary issue or the reason Rodgers' numbers were down, point to the offensive line giving up a lot of sacks, point to Eddie Lacy not having quite as good a year as he had in years past. But is there any reason to think Rodgers himself is the reason for the regression? So why or why not, Jesse?
A lot of people say that Rodgers likes to point the finger at his receivers, but I think last year he really needed to point the finger a little bit on himself, take some responsibility. He's big on accountability. He holds his receivers and his teammates to a very high bar of excellence out of there. I think if you were to sit down with Aaron Rodgers in a private conversation, he'd admit he didn't have the year that he's had in years past. His accuracy was a little shaky at sometimes, balls being delivered low to the receivers behind them from time to time. And just look at the Carolina game. He even said in that last play to Randall Cobb, where Cobb was wide open, he was spooked. There was something, and I think that had to deal with the line. He was getting hit a lot, and I just think he got spooked on that. So I see not Rodgers. He's not going to have a down year like last year. I think last year was a freak year off that. I think we're going to see a return to Rodgers, better accuracy, better yardage, better touchdowns. Call me a Packer homer, but I just think last year was, there were so many things going on, and the receivers weren't great, but Rodgers wasn't great either.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're going to kind of flip things around here. Jesse's going to go through the questions kind of facing the Packers defense this year. I'm going to answer them, so go ahead, take it away, Jesse.
So my first burning question is, with Clay Matthews move back to his natural position of outside linebacker, who's going to be the starting inside linebackers day one?
That's a very good question, because certainly complicating matters is the fact that Jake Ryan has not played in either of the first two preseason games, and he kind of ended last season as the starter. So can he regain that spot? It kind of looks like, for the time being, and Jake Ryan returned to practice this week, but only on a limited basis. He was only taking part in individual drills. We still don't even know if he's going to play in tonight's game or not. So I think, with him kind of being out or being limited, that at least for right now, the starters are Sam Barrington, who has come back off the PUP list and, last week was a starter in the second preseason game. And then Blake Martinez, who so far, there's been very little to complain about with the rookie. He's been a breath of fresh air in terms of, especially, I think everybody has noticed the increased speed and how that's going to help with him, in terms of coverage and not getting lost. And last year we would see that from Jake Ryan. He would trail the receivers he guarded, and they would pull away from him, and that was always discouraging. Now, that being said, maybe Jake Ryan can be more of your first and second down linebacker, and Martinez more of your second and third down, type of linebacker, in which he's more in coverage than anything else. So maybe they kind of peg those guys in roles like that. But I can't, if I had to guess right now, and this obviously with two preseason games left to go and things could change, but if I had to guess right now, I would say Sam Barrington and Blake Martinez are going to be the two inside linebackers on day one, week one of the NFL when the Packers travel to Jacksonville.
I think you're spot on with that day one. I can see down the line a player such as Joe Thomas, who put on the added weight, eventually maybe replacing Barrington. Barrington has at times been a liability in coverage, but mm-hmm. I think you're spot on with Barrington and Blake Martinez.
Yeah, Joe Thomas has had a great preseason. I can't say enough about him. Absolutely.
What about Carl Bradford out there?
Both him and Joe Thomas have been fantastic this preseason. They've taken those two, they're both third-year players. they've taken major steps forward. I guess Joe Tom, they might technically be second year because they both spent a year on the practice squad. But you know what I'm saying is that their third year since turning pro, at least. And they've been both been playing fantastic. I like the Packers' depth situation at inside linebacker far more this year than in the past. I can't tell you. I'd have to think about it in terms of how much I've liked the depth at the position, which is really nice.
Maybe since 2010 when we had Hawk and then Desmond Bishop.
Absolutely.
It's been a long time since we've been able to say we're pleased with the depth at inside linebacker, which is a great problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
All right.
So the second burning question facing the Packers defense then.
Actually, it's number three. So this goes back to kind of the secondary. With Demaryius Randall and Quinton Rollins kind of flashing as players, newcomers up in the secondary, do you think that this is going to be the Packers' best secondary that we've seen in decades?
Oh, decades. I definitely think it's going to be the best since the Packers last won the Super Bowl. And if I were to compare those two teams, I mean, they had Charles Woodson then, and he was such a transcendent player that it's tough for me to put him in that category yet. In terms of, you know, you had Tremont Williams, who, of course, was very... Tremont Williams having the best year of his career in 2010, and Sam Shields is your number three cornerback. But, I mean, I am looking for, in terms of breakout players in 2016, I would put both Demaryius Randall and Quinton Rollins in that category. I think highly of both of them. I thought they both had encouraging rookie seasons in which... they were out there and they contributed and maybe weren't great, weren't Pro Bowlers, but they both, you know, had a lot of learning to do. Randall as a former college safety converting to the cornerback position, and Rollins as a former college basketball player playing only his second year of football ever. So I thought there was a lot of learning in 2015 and they took that step forward. And I only see him taking that a step forward once again. And maybe we saw that in the second preseason game with Randall covering Amari Cooper and grabbing that interception and that looking like a fantastic play. You just hope that's there's more to come out of that. Obviously, it's just a preseason game and tough to put too much stock into that. But I think those guys are both going to be very good to go along with Sam Shields. I mean, that's three cornerbacks out there. And, you know, in today's day and age in the NFL, you got three cornerbacks on the field more often than not. So they'll all receive a heavy dose of playing time, no matter who's the starters among them. As far as safety goes, I think, you know, HaHa Clint Dix is... he just seems to have gotten better his first 2 years in the NFL. I have no reason to think he's not going to get better. Morgan Burnett, if you were to compare Morgan Burnett to the secondary the Packers had in, say, 2010, he's an upgrade over Charlie Peppra, who was kind of a limited athlete, I would say. Certainly played his role quite well. But, you know, we've always kind of wanted more big play production out of Morgan Burnett. He's been the guy who's, you know, always had just like one or two interceptions, and you're like, well, why is Morgan Burnett not getting four, five, or six? I think that's what people, when the Packers drafted him, expected and wanted out of him. That being said, he certainly has transformed himself into a very good player in the box, far better than I ever anticipated in run support out of Morgan Burnett. So he offers that. I just wish he would have a little bit more nose for the ball, be a little bit more of a magnet. But that being said, he's still very good. Yeah, I expect nothing but good things out of this Packers secondary, and it's only going to help if the Packers have a better pass rush in front of them.
You know what's ironic about Morgan Burnett? Coming out of Georgia Tech, he was more lauded as more of a ball hawk than a run stuffer, and his journey in the NFL has been the exact opposite, like you said. So that's kind of ironic. I was excited when we got drafted Morgan Burnett. He was on my radar because we needed a safety that could actually pickoff passes, which, you know, we've sorely missed. But I think HaHa Clinton Dix is going to emerge in that role. He's shown flashes in the last 2 years, and I only expect him to make the final leap to be a Pro Bowl caliber safety this year.
Yeah, they kind of play off each other very well in that regard, because I think, you know, they can each kind of, you know, be both play that free safety, strong safety role if need be. But I think, you know, their skill sets kind of match each other in that HaHa Clinton Dix is more of the traditional free safety, the roamer, the guy who can get interceptions. Morgan Burnett, more of the traditional strong safety, run support kind of guy.
Quick hot take. Who do you like better this year? Who's going to emerge as the better player, Quinton Rollins or Demaryius Randall?
That's a really good one. I would have to say I'm going to go with Demaryius Randall. Not that I have anything against Quinton Rollins, and I could certainly easily be proven wrong, but just I liked the big playability you saw out of Demaryius Randall last year, having, I think he had 4 interceptions, and they came at such crucial times. Like, I'm trying to remember now, was it the, what game was it?
The Carolina game.
Carolina, where he intercepted on the goal line to preserve the victory, and then I think it was against the Raiders, he had the pick six, and yeah, they just came at such opportune times. I'm hoping to see more of that, continue along that trend, hopefully even a few more interceptions this year than last year. So yeah, I'm going with Demaryius Randall, but by no means am I counting out Quinton Rollins in any regard from stepping forward and being that type of player as well.
I'm more of a Rollins guy. Yeah. I like his athletic ability. I like that he only played 1 year of football, got drafted in the second round, and flashed. I think his upside is going to be higher than Demaryius Randall. Randall does make big plays, but also last year he gave up a lot of big plays as well. So yeah, he needs to really cut down on that. And as you said, a few more picks would be nice, but I'm really on the Rollins train. I like him. There's just something, he has that it factor about him that he could be just, he knows where to be at the right place at the right time. I think he has a high football IQ out there.
Certainly a good position for the Packers to be in which they have a lot of options. But going back to the burning questions.
Burning question number 4. We have 2 outside linebackers now that were round 1 draft picks, Nick Perry and Detone Jones. Who do you think is going to have the bigger year as far as pass rush?
If I had to pick between the two, I would go with Nick Perry, kind of based upon that his production last year in the playoffs. I'm probably basing it off more than anything else, especially that game against the Washington in the wild card round. But I mean, playing well in the second round as well. And in terms of Nick Perry just being a little bit lighter, in terms of being faster, I think he can get around the edge a little bit better than Detone Jones, who's a little bit bigger. Certainly we've heard all about Detone Jones dropping weight to play outside linebacker. And not to say he can't get to the quarterback, but I do think that Nick Perry will have the bigger impact as a pass rusher. There's been kind of some rumblings during training camp in that, you know, and the preseason, that nobody's really seen Nick Perry flash during training camp this year. Not getting sacks, not getting a whole lot, but again, it is just training camp. It is just the preseason. I'm hoping once the lights come on, and there was no brighter lights than the playoffs when he played so well, and I think it was it 3 or 3.5 sacks in the playoffs last year, and that hasn't always been the case for Nick Perry, but I think he'll be motivated. He's playing under the 1-year contract this year. That's going to motivate him to get a pay raise in the future and a contract extension, whether it's with the Packers or not. He's playing for, you know, a new role somewhere in the NFL. And so, yeah, I think Detone Jones is going to, you know, play better than he ever has before. He's likewise motivated by the contract. Also, in the last year of his rookie contract, when the Packers didn't, you know, decline to use the 5th-year option on him, So I think, you know, they're both first round draft picks, and I think they finally, you know, hopefully they stay healthy, but I think they have career years, maybe not Pro Bowl years, but if they could each kind of get like their career high in sacks, I think that's possible out of them.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think Nick Perry he's in the contract year, same with Dayton Jones. But we've seen Nick Perry flash multiple times. If you remember his rookie year, the hit he put on Andrew Luck that got flagged for, which was not, he didn't lead with the helmet. He just crushed the guy. I think Luck being the guy that he was, he drew the penalty because it was such a vicious hit. But the Washington Redskins game, the bull rushes, he made their all-pro left tackle. I'm forgetting his name, but he made him look silly out there. I really like the way that Dayton Jones was looking towards the end of last year when Dom Capers decided to have him play that elephant position standing up. And I think him with cutting a little bit of weight this year, he could excel and also be motivated to get that extension out there. So both young players, I think that can be on the rise for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and both who figured to play more snaps this year with Julius Peppers kind of cutting back on his playing time in 2016.
All right, burning question number five. We talked about Clay Matthews moving back to his natural outside rush linebacker position. Along with our secondary, which I think is going to be much improved, and we have a healthy stack of outside linebackers that we can rotate with Peppers and Perry, as well as Dayton Jones in the mix, and whoever makes that other outside linebacker positions, whether it's Jarone Elliott or not, that's debatable right now because he hasn't had the best camp. But with all this talent that we have and the depth of outside linebackers, do you see Dom Capers moving more to an aggressive attacking style defense, kind of like in the Blitzburg days in the mid-90s?
I think it will be more aggressive in terms that just having Clay Matthews back at outside linebacker a majority of the time, and that's not to say we're not never going to see Clay Matthews at inside linebacker, would be certainly, from my perspective, advised to occasionally have him line up there just to mix things up once in a while. But having him at outside linebacker a majority of the time, which we've seen his first, you know, what was it, 3-4 years in the NFL prior to the last two, that's where he's at his best, I think. I know that's kind of debatable in some people's minds, not mine. You know, particularly, I think he's at his best as an outside linebacker. He's a good inside linebacker. I think he's an above average outside linebacker in just terms of that pursuit, that speed, that chase, that motor, that just seems to be better than almost anybody else in the NFL. You know, when you get him rushing after the quarterback off the edge more often than not, I think it's going to be an aggressive defense. I don't think the Packers are going to have to blitz exceptionally more in 2016 just because they're going to have Clay Matthews coming off the edge. I think it'll be on par in terms of bringing that extra, that fifth or sixth blitzer, what they've done in years past. But I think it'll be better because you've got Clay Matthews rushing more often in addition to what they already offer from Nick Perry, Dayton Jones, Julius Peppers, Mike Daniels, and anybody else who might chip in.
Yeah. How many sacks do you think that Matthews is going to have this year?
Assuming he stays healthy, I see no reason to think he can't reach double digits, at least 10 to 12 in that range. I think it goes right back to where it's been in, you know, the 2010, 2011, 2012, before he made the switch to inside linebacker.
Perfect. And I just realized that was only question number four. I skipped over a big one, and this is a big question mark with the Packers defense. We drafted Kenny Clark. He's having some lower back issues. We don't know if they're serious. We don't we don't want this to be Justin Herald part two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be able to fill the void of Raji retiring and then also Mike Pennell being suspended for PED use for the first four games?
Can he? Yes. Will he in 2016? I'm not sure, just from the standpoint that, A, kind of this is just kind of emerging in the past week here. Kenny Clark suffering the back injury in training camp. We don't even know if he's going to play in tonight's game or not. In fact, I would tend to think that the Packers are going to play it safe and just say, hey, we're going to save you for the regular season. But on top of that, I think what the Packers, the direction they appear to be going right now is Mike Daniels, of course, at one end. Then I think that they're looking at LaTroy Guyon kind of being the starting nose tackle with Dean Lowry being the other end. And Kenny Clark, while certainly having a role, I think it's going to start out as being more of a rotational player. Just because I think Dean Lowry is more of your prototypical five technique defensive end, whereas Clark is more of a nose tackle himself. So I just think that at least to start off with, because he's young too, he's like the youngest player on the roster, 21 years old, something like that. It may just take time for Kenny Clark, and I think we do have to temper the expectations. I certainly have no reason to think he can't be a very good player in due time. And in fact, maybe by the end of the year, he's playing more of a role, because we know LaTroy Guyon can play end. And maybe by the end of the year, when the Packers are in their base defense, it's Guyon and Daniels at the ends and Kenny Clark in the middle. So kind of that's kind of the way I'm approaching it right now. But yeah, subject to change.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think of Dean Lowry?
I like, in terms of him being compared to Kenny Clark, a four-year starter in college. He's got more experience under his belt. I was thinking of this the other day, that kind of the knock against Dean Lowry is that he's got the short arms, which I was thinking about it. If there's any position on a football field in which you can get away with shorter arms, it would be the five technique defensive end. You don't like them among your offensive linemen because you don't like defenders getting into you. You don't like them at almost any other position on the field, receivers, defensive backs who need those long arms to go and catch the balls, things like that. Maybe you could get by with a running back with short arm. But I just think with Kenny Clark, or Dean Lowry, pardon me, he's going to be kind of a two-down run stuff, right? I think he's going to be coming off the field quite a bit in passing situations. And I just think, you know, he can if he just fits that role, you know, I think he can fit that role okay for the Packers, kind of being a two-down run stuffer for them. Maybe he expands that role in due time. But to start things off, I think he's a run stuffer. You know, he's playing in that base defense. And that's all the Packers really need out of him. And I think he can do it okay. And I'm hoping for the best.
Absolutely. I hope for the best as well. Those first four games are going to be rough without Pennell out there. And we're facing some good rushing teams out there. And obviously the week one Jacksonville game, it's going to be high humidity, high heat. Mm-hmm. We have to keep players fresh. So being a little thin at the defensive line, it's a little bit worrisome week one.
Absolutely. All right, to kind of throw out one bonus question here. We've covered the offense, we covered the defense, and we're not going to cover five questions for special teams, but just one here, Jesse. Does Peter Mortel have a realistic chance of unseating Tim Maste as the team's punter?
I would say he has a chance. Is he going to win the job? Right now, the way it looks is Maste's got the better hang time, right around 4.5 seconds, with a much less net on the punts. Mortel has been very impressive with the length of his punts, doing an outstanding job. A little concerned about the average hang time of 3.99 seconds. You usually want to have your punters well above the 4 range. But with that said, Maste, we know what we get with him. All right, he's okay. He's just an okay punter. Mm-hmm. It seems that every time we need him for a nice directional kick or getting it inside the 10-yard line on a nice easy punt, he punts it out of bounds or out the back of the end zone. So who do I want? Who am I rooting for? I'm rooting for the hometown kid, a breath of fresh air. If you're asking me, if it comes down to it's even, it's a draw, it's going to come down to holding skills. Crosby is very confident in Maste's skills. They have a good chemistry. Can Mortel be the same? Have the same chemistry with Crosby? We'll see. What do you think?
I tend to think right now the Packers just go with status quo with Tim Maste. That being said, there are two preseason games left. I'm not giving up on Peter Mortel yet, although it is kind of tough to bring a second punter into that last preseason game once you've already got to cut the roster down to 75 and you like to have those position players out there to play those snaps in that last preseason game. So whether they can continue to do that, we'll see. But I'm not giving up on him yet. If Peter Mortel can get a little bit more hang time, that would certainly be a check mark in his corner. And he is the cheaper option, if nothing else. You know, if they were to cut Tim Maste, they would save a little bit under the salary cap. And he's got that going for him. So, I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Absolutely. One last bonus special teams question. Because it's very important. It's who's winning the punt return job?
The punt return job. That is a good question. I guess right now I would have to go with Jared Abradaris in terms of he's been healthy. He's been out there. Maybe they're scared of putting Ty Montgomery out there coming off the injury himself last season. They're obviously scared of Randall Cobb being, you know, I think those days of being a return specialist are done with him, which he did so much his first year or two in the NFL. I think Trevor Davis had a nice little audition during the preseason, but I think with Abradaris having, you know, a year of experience under the belt, I guess I give it to him, but again, subject to change.
No Micah Hyde?
That's a good question. I didn't even think about it. And, you know, Micah Hyde did so well his first 2 years as a punt returner, and then kind of took a regression last year. It could very well be the case they go back to him. What do you think?
It's tough. I think that Abadaris, assuming he makes the 53, which I had him slotted as the number 4A mm-hmm. option with Montgomery being the 4B, He has a knack for getting upfield and seeing holes. He's just got that playmaking ability. I think he's going to be the number one punt returner. But if Trevor Davis is active on the 53, they might give him some opportunity because he's got that game-changing speed out there, and they could alternate on that.
Yeah.
And if they have fumbling issues, which I hope that's not the case, either one of those two, they're obviously going to put Hyde back there because he's the most trusted option. With Randall Cobb, too valuable to put him out there.
Yeah, Micah Hyde, I'll give him this. Even if his, you know, punting return average went down this past year, he has been very sure-handed and gives them that option, if nothing else. But that kind of leads us into the next segment of the show.
Packers news of the day.
According to ESPN's Dan Graziano, the NFL presented no new evidence in their questioning of Green Bay Packers linebackers Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, who were being investigated for potential PED use stemming from allegations made in an Al Jazeera documentary by a man named Charlie Sly. Matthews and Peppers took part in their investigations on Wednesday, while former Packer Mike Neal and Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison doing theirs on Thursday. I'm not sure to what happened Harrison's insistence on August 30th. Apparently he caved. We still haven't heard word from the NFL either clearing them or potentially handing down some possible suspension. I think the feeling is that they'll be cleared, but until they are officially, people are going to continue to wait on pins and needles. So Jesse, I guess I'll ask you this. Do you expect Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers to be cleared?
One word answer. No. Or they'll be cleared. They will not miss time.
Okay. Yeah. I pretty much am in the same boat there. I think these guys are going to be cleared, just in terms of it's already happened to Peyton Manning. I can't imagine. I just don't know what new evidence the NFL can come up with, as long as Charlie Sly's record keeping was not making any paper trail or anything like that. I think these guys are going to be cleared, and it could happen. Who knows? As soon as today. Anything to add?
They're going to be cleared. There's no evidence. Did they use PEDs, Brian? Do you think so?
I tend to think they do, and there's just no evidence of it. That's me being a cynic and a skeptic. But what can you do?
I'm in total agreement. I think there's a lot of players that use PEDs. It's always the people that use PEDs and manufacture them, they're always one step ahead. You look at the cycling with doping, the Olympics, they keep blood on file for 10 years and then they end up taking back gold medals. if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Apparently that's the scenario. Especially look at James Harrison. James Harrison got cut by the Steelers a couple of years back. He went to Arizona, right? He was not the same player. Mm-hmm. And then he went back to Pittsburgh and, kind of rejuvenated his career. Do I think he used PEDs? Yeah, probably.
I know the comments actually, if you go back and watch that documentary with Charlie Sly's comments on Clay Matthews, are that he did do steroid or, did something and hasn't lately or something like that. And that I can believe. Maybe he's gone clean or something along those lines. It's all speculation at this point. I don't anticipate them being suspended in any case. And we just wait for the official word from the NFL in the meantime. But that leads us into this.
The day ahead.
All right, so if you live in Wisconsin or anywhere east of there, you may have to stay up past your bedtime to watch the Packers kick off at 9 o'clock p.m. Central Time in San Francisco on Friday night. There's plenty of good news for the Packers fans everywhere, however. One is that with the Olympics now over, you can go back to watching tonight's game against the 49ers on WTMJ in Milwaukee and WGBA in Green Bay, along with affiliates in seven states across the U.S. Additionally, you can watch Friday's game nationwide on the NFL Network, which is simulcasting the game. Or, as usual, you can stream the game with a subscription to NFL Game Pass or listen to the Packers Radio Network as well. But this is the dress rehearsal in which you'll see the starters play the most. The third preseason game happens every year. So if you could only watch one preseason game, this would be it. It's still not at the level of the regular season, with specific game planning really not a part of the action. But other than that, jobs are still at stake. And as far as watching one-on-one matchups, it's worth your time. So enjoy it tonight, folks. It'll be a late night for many people staying up to watch the Green Bay Packers, but we're getting near the end, because the cut down to 75 happens after the third preseason game, and we wait for that coming down the pike pretty soon. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much for joining us. My call to action is always as usual. If you've not done so already, give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you could do us a solid, head to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV, give us that 5-star rating and a brief little review, and we'd greatly appreciate it. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Thanks for lending some insight. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it. Anytime, Ryan.
All right. Have a good weekend, folks. Have a good Friday. Enjoy the game. We will see you later. I leave you today, if I can find it here, with a song called Cannon in the Heavens by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack Go.